Recorded live in the Phantasmo Lounge, high atop the Ruby Gonzalez building in beautiful Midtown Portsmouth, Virginia, it's Phantasmo After Dark with your host, Rob Floyd, and guest co-host, Craig Eckridge. Tonight's topic, Remo Williams, The Adventure Begins. Well, hey everybody, welcome back to the old podcast here. And with me tonight in the lounge, hey Craig, how you doing?
Rob, how are you?
Pretty good. Talking about tonight, one of our personal favorite movies here, Remo Williams, The Adventure Begins and Ends.
Never gets enough love. Never gets enough love.
No. This is a real interesting movie. And the fact it's one that came from a series of adventure books. I guess the books started out in the 70s, right? It didn't start in the 60s, I don't think.
Yeah, I think early 70s.
Early 70s. A series of books called The Destroyer. Which, you know, along the lines of the, you know, Mac Bolan, the Executioner, all those type of books, except it had a big twist where the lead character didn't use guns at all. He used a mythical martial art called Sinanju that was taught to him by the last living master of Sinanju, and it's kind of cool. I mean, the books are fantastic. The books are a great read. It's not your typical karate, kung fu, chop sake type martial art that he practices, and... Well, let me back up a little bit and give a little history of the character first before we get into what he does. Remo was a policeman that got framed, and they faked his death so they could use him as a secret agent that nobody knew. They gave him a new face, new identity, and works for this branch of government that doesn't exist called CURE, which was set up by a young president in the 60s to fight the enemies of the country that... couldn't be fought with regular and conventional means. And so Remo was born. And to give him an edge, instead of using guns and stuff, they found Master Chun, the last living master of Sinanju, who taught him this art from the ground up, which, well, yeah, you got to read the books. Because Chun didn't want to teach him at first, because apparently you have to be taught from birth to really learn the art. But somehow Remo adapted. And as the books unfold, you find out why and all that over the years. But basically, he's a secret agent that goes around and takes care of business and straightens shit out.
Mm-hmm. And the key to all of it is the art of Sinanju basically makes you the peak of human perfection. You have to adjust your diet. You can't eat certain things anymore. It's basically rice and duck after a while.
Yeah.
But you're able to do stuff such as... dodge bullets, which we'll see in the movie, super strength. He does all sorts of feats.
Yeah, it's like
books, climbs up walls like Spider-Man.
Yeah, basically turns into kind of a superhero. And the way they explain the things that he does in the book, you're like, well, maybe. You know, it's almost plausible to a degree.
How much of this stuff have you tried?
You know, well, I'm not at a peak of physical perfection. And I don't think I could survive on just rice and duck either.
That's a fair point.
Yeah, you know, it's a fantasy. Yeah, you know, of course, it's a fantasy series of books, but they're well written. They're phenomenal political and social commentary in them, and they're just a lot of fun. And they're really different from any of the other adventure books that were out there at the time, and even now, I guess.
How did you first come into contact?
I tell you, I'd seen the books on the shelf along with all the other adventure books, you know, and the covers kind of stood out a little bit, but I didn't pay much attention to them because I was a kid, you know, when it came out. And then the movie came out, Remo, and the trailers and all, I'm like, oh, this looks kind of cool. And then I saw the movie, and I enjoyed the movie, and, you know, I was like, find out it was from the books. I'm like, well, I've got to read the books. I got to check this out. And then the books just blew me away how much better they are than the movie ever could be. Or ever, well, it was. It could be better. And that's what we're going to talk about. but, you know, I saw the movie first and then read the books. And then I just insatiably read the books. Found them as, you know, got the new ones as they came out. Went into used bookstores and got old copies as much, you know, me as I could. I mean, that's how it was for me. How about you?
Well, right after we got cable TV installed back home, we got HBO and Remo Williams was in heavy rotation on the channel.
Oh, yeah.
So I started watching it, and it's one of those movies that if I saw it was one, I stopped looking around.
Yeah.
And, you know, put the remote down and finished watching it.
Yeah.
Years later, when I was in the Army, I was at Fort Bragg, and I went into one of my buddy's barracks rooms. We were getting ready to go somewhere, and he had one of the books laying on the bed.
Oh, okay.
And I had no idea it was based on a series of books. I didn't pay attention to that in the credits.
Yeah.
So I picked it up because, like you said, the cover was really interesting, and I looked on the back, and I'm like, oh, Remo and Chum. I'm like, oh, I remember this movie. That's such a great movie.
Yeah, yeah.
So he traded the book to me, and right outside base was a used bookstore.
Uh-huh.
And we'd go in there like once every month, once every couple of weeks, and there would be two or three, and I'd buy them. And I went in there one day, and there was like 30 or 40 of them.
Oh, man.
So I told the proprietor, I said, fetch a box. And that's kind of how I started building my collection.
Right on. Cool.
Let's talk about the local ties.
Oh, yeah. That's something in the books that it's fantastic. I was reading one of them one day, and all of a sudden it says, you know, these troops were marching down Granby Street in Norfolk, Virginia. I'm like, ah, that's around the corner. That's just 10 minutes away. And then the Ruby Gonzalez wig shop on the corner of Granby Street, and I forget the other street, but that's an actual place that's still there. It's not called Ruby's Gonzalez wig shop. It's, I can't think of the name of the wig shop. It escapes me. But there is a wig shop on the corner of Granby Street and 21st Street in downtown Norfolk. And that's exactly what they were talking about. And I think in some of the earlier books, Remo and Chun are training in an abandoned warehouse somewhere in downtown Norfolk, Virginia. So that was kind of cool. That really kind of is like, hey, hometown boy almost. You know?
Exactly, yeah.
So that's really neat, especially if you're from this area, you know. And come to find out, years and years and years later, doing the Phantasmo Cult Summit Explosion, the movie program that we've been doing for a lot of years, where we showed double features, we found out that one of the authors and creators of the story, Warren Murphy, actually lived in Virginia Beach. And all these years, we never knew it. But so we got in contact with him and got him to come to speak one night when we actually showed Remo. So that was just a big thrill.
That was unbelievable.
Wasn't that awesome?
You're sitting there watching the movie with the man who created the character.
Yeah.
It was beyond cool. And he was super gracious.
Oh, yeah. Funny. Nice guy.
Funny. Gave a great talk before and after, answered questions. Could not have been a nicer guy.
Oh, yeah. Unfortunately, he passed away a couple years ago. And that's a shame because I would like to have talked to him again. But I'm glad we had that chance. That was just amazing.
Oh, that
amazing.
Was, yes. That was an opportunity that few ever get.
Oh, yeah. But you can still read the books and see the movie. Now, speaking of the movie, here's where we get into some gray area as far as... Well, don't get me wrong. We love the movie. The movie's a lot of fun. But compared to the books, the way the books are written and the adventure and everything, the movie's really not... It's just barely touching the surface of what it could have been.
Well, the thing with the movie is it was supposed to be the first.
Yeah.
It was going to kick off the franchise, and unfortunately the box office just wasn't there.
Yeah.
So you get the traditional, how many times do we see Peter Parker, you know, Uncle Ben get shot? How many times do we see the Waynes get shot?
Yeah.
You know, not that it's the same situation, but they got to establish the origin story.
Oh, yeah.
Because, granted, even though the books were popular, they weren't mainstream. Not many people knew who this was.
No. But I think my biggest problem with the movie is insofar as the villain in it wasn't as big a scale villain as it is in the books usually. I mean, in the movie, it was a guy who made faulty parts for army weapons. He was just an industrialist like that. He didn't have a grand scheme. And in most of the books, the villain has an end game, an objective, you know, a big, maybe sometimes even world-changing scheme. And in the movie, he really didn't.
Yeah. Well, I think they were just kind of building up to that personally.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but I think something on a more of a scale of an actual, more like a Bond villain. Which is odd because the idea of this they were trying to do was create a franchise like Bond insofar as they hired one of the screenwriters of, I don't know, maybe it was Spy Who Loved Me, Christopher Wood, I think, maybe, and Guy Hamilton, who directed Goldfinger and Man with the Golden Gun and a couple of other Bonds. So they had a Bond director, a Bond screenwriter, but they didn't pull off that type of movie. It didn't feel like that type of movie. It didn't have that kind of scale. As much fun as it is, you know, I'm not knocking the film. It's not a great film by any means, but it is a fun film, and it's a good little action movie. And the performances in it are the two leads, Chun and Remo, Fred Ward. You can't lose with Fred Ward in anything.
Oh, you really can't.
You know, and Joel Grey playing an 80-some-year-old Korean man. You wouldn't know it was Joel Grey. It was the makeup was amazing. His performance was amazing.
And you also wouldn't be making that movie in 2017, but that's a different story.
Yeah. And it's a shame because now we have the technology to do all of Remo's abilities and make him look right. You know, you could do the bullet dodging and make it really look cool. Like, well, first time I saw The Matrix, I was like, well, shit, there's Remo right there. You know?
He was Neo before Neo.
And I think that's one thing it suffers from is the showing Remo's abilities. It does okay with what they could do back then, but there's not a wow factor. Not enough of it. I mean, I think it would have been cool to show Chewing a little more, show his ability a little more. You get a couple of things like him doing holding himself up on the two fingers when he's sitting on the floor like that, and he flips that one guy around at the Statue of Liberty, but it's nothing spectacular. It's just like basically just a judo flip kind of thing. And then Remo and the Statue of Liberty fight is cool because it's on the Statue of Liberty. The scale of that is awesome, but you don't get much Remo stuff. Now, granted, like you say, it's the origin movie. And even in the first couple of books, I don't think they had Sinanju nailed down as to what it became.
They didn't.
You know, it was more of just a basic kung fu karate until they got into it. And later they explained that in the books that Chun wasn't going to teach Remo the sun source of all arts until he found out that he could do it. He was adaptable to it. But I don't know. I think that's one of that's my two big things about the movie is that the plot wasn't big enough for the character. And showing Sinanju, it didn't have the kind of wow factor that it does in the books. It didn't come off that way. It had some neat bits, like him training when he was doing the balance training in the loft. Mm-hmm. That was kind of cool, but the scene where he like dives into that mound of sand and comes out the top, it was a little cheesy looking, the way it was kind of played off. And the bit of him running across the sand and you see him not leaving footprints like he's floating, but he's not, doesn't like he's moving any faster, you know? That didn't look, it didn't come, I know what they were trying to do, but it didn't present itself that way. I mean, I knew from reading the books what it was supposed to be, but it didn't come off looking that great, I don't think. How about you?
I'm going to disagree with you on that.
Okay, go right ahead.
Because during the course of the movie, after Remo is kind of shanghaied, recruited is not the right word, after he's shanghaied into this organization,
yeah,
his first mission is to actually go kill somebody.
Yeah.
And he's not told that it's Chun.
Yeah.
So he goes in there. The guy tells him, you know, watch yourself. The guy's a killer. And he goes in. There's this just little, frail, elderly-looking Korean man.
This is one of the best scenes in the movie.
And then Remo pulls out the gun and starts blasting, and Chun just moves.
Yeah.
And now my take on it is it's the economy of motion. He barely moves just enough to get out of the way.
Oh, yeah.
And to me, that was kind of slick. It doesn't have to be the big flourishy,
oh, no, no,
lean back and floating trench coat and everything. But if you contrast that to Remo, like when you said when he's running across concrete or whatever and, you know, coming in through the thing, I didn't have a problem with that because to me, it's going to look less graceful because he's still learning.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, no. I agree with you on that. And that first scene is awesome. It's one of the best scenes in the movie. And Chun, the economy of motion is perfect. But later in the film, some of the bigger scenes just didn't have that wow factor they needed to sell the movie to the audience. You know what I mean?
I think I'm going to have to agree to disagree with that.
It didn't sell the movie to the audience.
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's just that or also you got to remember this is the 80s.
Yeah.
And everything was about guns and explosions.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know if just that was,
well,
you know, did the audience think it was boring at the time?
Well, I don't know. And we also, too, a lot of it has to do with how, you know, publicity and distribution and all that, too. And the poster, I own the poster, you own the poster.
Yes.
It's not that great a poster, though. If you look at it, the art's horrible. The perspective of Remo, it's horrible art. I think the poster needed to have more to it, too, to more of a wow factor, maybe Remo and Chun on it, maybe a little more action than just, because it's kind of plain. It's got the Statue of Liberty and the Remo hanging from one of the things, and that's all that's on the poster. It doesn't give you enough.
Well, the funny part is they actually talk about that in one of the books.
Oh,
Remo's chasing a guy through an apartment, and he sees there's this terrible movie poster where a guy is hanging from the Statue of Liberty, and they reference that in one of the books.
That's
it's actually
awesome.
Pretty funny. But it sounds like we're really knocking this film, but it's
no. I'm getting all that out of the way.
We love it.
I want to get all that out of the way first, to just so when we start gushing over it, it's not that we understand what it's about. We understand everything about it, but it is one of those movies that it hit us at the right time when we saw it. And then reading the books and developing a love for the character and the stories kind of makes you like the movie on a different level even more, with all its faults, which I'm pointing out the faults.
I would think that even if all the faults were corrected, you got to think about it. This is called the cult movie podcast.
Yeah.
I don't know if this movie, being what it was, would have ever found a bigger audience.
Oh, probably not.
I think it was, you know, maybe like a Rocky Horror or whatever, a Big Trouble in Little China. It was understood by the people
who
like these things.
Yeah, well, that's why
it's
still...
But it's not big enough to make a...
Oh, no. I mean, that's why it still sells copies. You know, there's still copies available of it because people still want to see it. And people, like you say, people understand it, get it. But, you got to think, too, when it came out, this was like 85, so Karate Kid had just been out and movies like that were big
Ninja
box
craze.
Office.
Ninja Craze was full swing.
It was in the middle of all that, and it kind of snuck in and then was gone. So it didn't have a lot of push behind it, but it doesn't have... It's just missing the boat on being really cool, and some of the big exciting scenes are, for me, are like almost there, but not quite.
Now, I'll agree with that. I'll
just
agree with that.
It's like the Phantom. Okay, the Billy Zane movie, The Phantom. Potential to be great adventure movie. Great period adventure movie. And some of the big action scenes are like, oh, just almost, but no, they just miss it.
Now, I'll agree with that.
The director just fell short of creating a really good action scene. And this is kind of the same way.
I wonder how much of that is, you know, Guy Hamilton being a Bond director. Bond always has, you know, gadgets and M and Spectre and everything. Yeah. Did he have maybe the mental picture to say, okay, these guys do the same thing, but he could do it with technology, but not with someone doing it for themselves?
I don't know. I think just the dramatic buildup of some of the scenes could have been more. And then again, it goes back to where I don't think the villain was big enough for Remo. Something like this, it shouldn't have been a whole picture. This should have been like the prelude to the picture. You know, like the opening scene in the Bond movies, you know, the pre scene. That's what this villain should have been. He wasn't big enough for me for Remo to take a whole movie to defeat him. But that being said, okay, you know, what we like about the movie, let's go that direction now, because I don't want to trash the movie. I'm just pointing out we do understand its faults, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And why it didn't succeed and all that. But other than that, it is a lot of fun. I mean, you've got, okay, let's go. Fred Ward, Joel Grey, Wilford Brimley, Kate Mulgrew, Michael Pataki.
Oh, of course.
Okay, Pataki's in it. So, you know.
Yeah.
We mentioned it a few times on this podcast.
Right.
So you got some, you know, some fun character actors in here who always put in solid performances. So you got that. And Fred Ward's just always fun, no matter what he does. He's that Joe average, regular guy, kind of character actor guy that you kind of can identify with. So you're with Remo from the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Once Chun gets on screen.
Oh, it's just magic.
It's golden. Joel Grey, I think he got nominated for Best Supporting Actor that year. Or they got nominated for Best Makeup or something.
I think it was the makeup.
Yeah, they got nominated for Best Makeup, and they lost out to Mask, the Cher movie Mask. But this is phenomenal. I mean, if you've never seen this movie, you got to see it just to see Joel Grey play this old Korean man. And, of course, his experience as a dancer just...
That just translates over.
Well, just let him be Chun and move like Chun, you know, graceful and not having any martial arts training whatsoever, which was kind of a plus because then he's not hampered by any of that. They can make it up as they go, which Sinanju, like we said, was not a real martial art.
But oh, don't we both wish?
Oh, brother, yes.
Don't we wish?
Yeah, the plot is, like I think we said it, they recruit Remo, Shanghai Remo, for this organization that doesn't exist. And his first mission after the test, going after Chun, is to take down George Grove of Grove Industries, who's making faulty weapons parts that has killed a couple, or at least one soldier. And he's trying to get finances for a Star Wars type defense program that really
doesn't. HARP.
Yeah, that really doesn't exist.
But then you also see they peel back layers, and he's got an assassin on payroll.
Yeah.
And they were investigating him for fraud, and the IRS investigator
he's a
was
bad
killed,
guy.
And then the family, like the lady and her 10-year-old son, I believe his name was Skippy, mysteriously come up dead or missing. So he's a bad guy. And they say that in the movie, and it's one of my favorite lines, basically Remo's job is to be the 11th commandment. Thou shalt not get away with it.
Yeah, that's a great line.
I love that line.
Yeah, that is a great line. And, you know, it goes on through Remo's training, which is fun.
Oh, yeah.
Those scenes are all great. They're golden. Anytime when it's Fred Ward and Joel Grey on the screen, it's golden. And like I said before, the scene where he has training to do the balance training in the apartment was pretty good. I mean, you got to think, there was no CGI.
No.
That stunt guy was really doing that balance and stuff. So that was pretty cool. You wouldn't catch me trying that shit.
Oh, No.
And then when he takes him out, and they're running along that ledge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they were really running along the ledge of a building there.
Yeah, and that's crazy.
Yeah. And then the Statue of Liberty. Now, that was pretty cool, because a lot of that was filmed on the actual Statue of Liberty. But a lot of the close-up stuff, when they're up by at the top, they built two full-size replicas. One was in Mexico City somewhere. Then they had to go back and do some reshoots, so they had to either move it or build another one. I can't remember. But most of those shots were shot on the replica. Mm-hmm. But a lot of it was shot at the actual Statue of Liberty, too.
And it's also iconic because it's when they were doing the refurbishing.
Yeah.
So it had the scaffolding around it.
Yeah.
Which led into a lot of it. But, you know, I don't want to sound too old, but these kids today, they weren't alive when that happened. So
yeah.
They have no idea what was going on with their...
Oh, yeah.
And it adds a whole different element. And it's kind of fun because it locks it in time.
Yeah, yeah. What Greg was talking about is they were restoring the Statue of Liberty, refurbishing it, and for its, I think, centennial celebration. Mm-hmm. And so it had all this scaffolding all over it for, a couple of years, I think.
Oh, yeah.
While they were doing this work. And actually, the director, I was reading something about this, director saw that one day, and that's what... They put that scene in the movie because he's like, that would make a great action backdrop. We're using that, which it did. It did. It was pretty cool. It could have been more exciting, but it still is a lot of fun, because especially that opening shot where you see him standing on the edge of that scaffolding and then the camera backs up and you see the scope of how big everything is around him. And everything.
Well, what I like about it, and it's kind of subtle, is that it all starts when you're talking about them running on the edge of the building because Remo was afraid of heights.
Yeah.
So they do that, and then they go to Coney.
Yeah.
Onto the Wonder Wheel.
William Hickey, by the way.
William Hickey.
Yeah.
Come on. Daddy's got a card game to go to. I think we talked about the Wonder Wheel on another podcast.
Wonder Wheel.
Some little movie or something like that.
Yeah, some movie. You know, I don't know.
Clowns with baseball bats or something. I don't know.
They went out to play. I don't know.
So they go to the Wonder Wheel next, and then they work their way up to the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah.
And it's... It's a fun scene, but it makes sense in the context of the training.
Oh, yeah. He's got to conquer his fear of heights so they can move on to the next phase of training. And he pretty much conquers his fear of heights there.
Oh, yeah, because Grove has hired some of his no-good-nicks to arrange an accident on the Statue of Liberty. So instead of just training, now it becomes some cat and mouse.
Yeah, yeah, and one of those guys down at the bottom, the guys in the suits, Judo Gene LaBelle.
Yep.
And I think Joe Polito is one of those
guys. I
don't
know about Polito, but I know that Gene LaBelle is the guy that goes into the concrete.
Yeah, yeah.
And that worker just makes the greatest face just watching him sink.
What the hell face? But it's cool because Remo, he defeats the guys on the Statue of Liberty and then comes down, and the other guys start chasing him.
Mm-hmm.
And he runs away from them, trying to get away, which I don't understand. He's running away. But he does.
Well, he wasn't at that level of
training.
That's true.
But he does... end up running across wet concrete without sinking in it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got to that, and the other guy runs after him and falls right in it.
And down he goes.
Yeah. And then one of the guys tries to shoot Remo and misses, and Chun is a little ways away and hears the shot and comes after him and takes care of that guy without anybody seeing, and just casually walks away. It's a great little scene.
And then subsequent to that, there's another agent that works for Cure as well. Wilford Brimley is Harold W. Smith.
Yeah.
The head of the organization, accountable to only one man.
The president.
And the other guy...
Conrad McCleary,
with one arm,
yep,
is kind of like Remo's mentor of a sort. Not Sinanju, ex kind of boozy CIA, retired, but a no-nonsense guy. He can definitely handle his stuff. And he's there as Remo's kind of mentor. So they decide to up the investigation and investigate the actual heart project itself, which is where they find that it's not really a thing.
Yeah, it's just window dressing, they call it. It's
and McCreary gets captured.
Yeah.
And this organization is kind of like the mob because there's only one way out, and that's feet first. So McCleary gets captured and does what he has to do, which leads to another one of my favorite scenes where Remo reports back to Harold W. Smith, who's about to pull the plug on everything. He's going to kill himself. There's actually a bit of drama. And it's kind of emotional because Remo finds out that he was supposed to be taken out by Chun. And at this point, they also mentioned that Remo was recruited because he was an orphan, no close family. It's become kind of a father and son thing.
Yeah, which in the books develops over time to where Remo starts calling Chun little father.
Yeah.
And Chun, over time, starts thinking of Remo as his son.
Yeah.
So they had to kind of rush that and get that, to get that in here to, you know, get that part of the mythology
to
the
audience. Then what it leads to is Remo saying, you know, we're not giving up, we're done, and he's getting frustrated, and he's saying, so that's it? They're just going to get away with it? Nobody can stop them? And it's a great moment because Harold Smith looks and goes real quiet. He goes, you can stop them, son.
Yeah.
And then that's where the movie really starts picking up speed after that. And then Remo responds to one of the army base where they're testing some of Grove's weapons, where he comes into contact with Major Raynor Fleming, as played by
Kate Mulgrew.
There you go.
Earlier in the movie, he bumps into her and kind of makes an ass out of himself trying to clumsily flirt with her.
That's right.
So they had contact. So this is the second time that those two characters meet. But at this point, he falls out of or jumps out of the back of an army truck that's going through the base. He's in fatigues. And
he basically cons her into thinking he's army intelligence.
Yeah.
So she kind of uses her rank to shepherd him through. And then after a series of misfortunes and misdirections, Remo takes out one of Grove's goons. And since Grove has the general on the payroll, they mark Remo and Major Fleming as enemies to the country. So it's basically Remo and her against a whole army base.
Yeah, yeah. Which I think could have been played up a little bigger. Of course, they didn't have a big budget on this either. Because you never see the whole army base going after them. You see them walking through the woods alone most of the time on this bomb range or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, but still, it's pretty cool because they get to a point where Chun has been following Remo to make sure he doesn't embarrass them.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets to this this point where, okay, the Grove is going this way, so Remo's got to go after him, and Chun says that. He says, just don't embarrass us.
Yeah.
So Fleming stays with Chun, and Remo goes after him, and that whole scene where he's on that that target log, going, you know, being pulled through the cables, that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
They start shooting at him, and that finally falls down, and it's one-on-one Remo against Grove at the end, and we get to see Remo do a little bullet dodging, and it's pretty cool the way it's done without having the Matrix effects.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of cool, and that Fred Ward pulled it off.
Oh yeah, and you can see that he's the pupil, and he's going to continue the line.
Yeah,
and it's always got that kind of sense of disappointment. It's like, where's the next movie?
Yeah,
where's the next movie?
I really wish they could have done another one because this one, like you say, is the origin film and it's setting up things.
Mm-hmm.
That could have played into a better, more, you know, action-packed movie. And just the mythology of the character is so, you know, has such a long history. It would have been nice to see the next chapter in the movie.
Yeah.
You know, it continues. Because he does that little bit then where he's walking away and he's rubbing the stick and creates fire with the friction and then tosses it on the gas. It's like, that was something right out of the books.
Mm-hmm.
Because the whole thing is to, whenever he takes out one of the bad guys, is to make it look like it was an accident.
And at one point, Chun's running down all the assassinations. Was, you know, the Persian boy, Alexander, Napoleon, Robin Hood.
Robin Hood? A bandit.
That's right. You talk about it like it's a service. Assassination is the highest form of public service.
Yeah.
And those moments between Remo and Chun totally make up for the action pieces.
Oh, yeah.
Because the interplay...
They're right out of the books.
And some of the insults that Chun hurls in, he's like, you drive like a monkey in heat.
Yeah.
You move like a baboon with club feet. I see a spark of promise in him.
My favorite line is at the very end where they're driving away on that boat, and Remo's driving the boat. Chun is standing on the bow of the boat with his arms crossed, and Remo's just driving the speedboat, and Chun's not moving, you know? And Chun is harping about, they have to get home in time to see the soap opera that Chun watches to find out if the guy's going to live. And Remo's like, Chun, you're incredible. Hmm. And Chun says, no, I'm better than that. That's awesome. Because, I mean, he would say that. The character would, that's right out of the books.
Oh, know? Absolutely. Absolutely. And the progression of the relationship, they really pull that off well too.
Yeah, I mean, for having it like an hour and some change movie, hour mm-hmm. and a half movie, they do that good. You know, that mm-hmm. that it goes along at a good pace, and they build the relationship. In the books, it would have taken a few books to get that way. If they had it set where they were going to do a couple of movies, they could have made that space that out a little bit. But for just a one time movie thing, it was pretty good.
Now they did try to stretch it out into a TV show.
Oh, God. I knew you were going to bring that up.
Because, of course, I was. Because
we have to talk about that.
Yes, we do.
Because it was the only other thing in film of Remo. This was god-awful. They did a one-shot TV movie about, mm-hmm. I don't know, three, four years after the theatrical movie. The bright spot, Roddy McDowall played Chun.
Mm-hmm. And it's seamless. It's almost the exact same makeup, the exact same portrayal.
Yeah. I mean, Roddy's a little taller and stuff, you know, not as small as Joel Grey, but he pulled it off. It'd been interesting to see what he would have done if it would have continued.
Mm-hmm.
But Roddy McDowall pulled it off. Of course, I'd watch Roddy McDowall read a damn phone book. You know, he's just that kind of actor. He's one of those guys that I'll watch in anything. But he did goodness. Now, the guy they chose to play Remo was god awful. He had a big mop of shaggy hair. He was too, hey guys, what's going on? Too much of that mm-hmm. kind of guy. And it was made for TV. So it had that made for TV feel to it of action movies in the 80s. I'm not going to say it sucked, but it just wasn't good. It did not say.
Well, I'll tell you the problem with the TV movie, and I can sum it up into one thing.
Okay.
To hit the positives, I don't think they cast the right actor.
Yeah.
But the general plot of the TV show is Remo's going to strike out on his own because he knows Sinanju and he doesn't need Chun and this, that, and the other, and da-da-da-da-da. So then there's another assassin who comes into contact with Chun who says, I know who you are, I know your reputation, yeah. I'll be your pupil. And basically, Chun hires him to humble Remo down a little bit.
That's right.
So I don't really have a problem with the way he plays the character.
That plot would have come right out of the books.
Yeah.
The plot.
I don't have a problem with the way the actor played the character attitude-wise. I just don't think physically I bought
it.
I just didn't buy it physically.
No. He did not resemble the character he was supposed to be playing at all. It just didn't work.
But they did one thing right in the very beginning, and I like this as a little touch. He's doing some kind of mission in a building, and he's practicing climbing, so it's still played back to the heights thing.
Yeah.
And through something or other, the building catches on fire. And Remo escapes by kind of sliding down the stream with one of the fire hoses.
Yeah.
Which is right out of the books.
Yeah.
And I can appreciate that. I thought that was a neat little touch. But what totally sinks the TV movie, and I think it was actually a pilot, they were going to do a show.
Yeah.
Was that god-awful roller skate fight.
Oh, geez, yeah.
Chun sets Remo up for failure with a gang of your mid-80s biker gang with the denim vest and on the Suzukis and Yamahas or whatever. Yeah. Not a very realistic gang. So Chun sets them up to fight Remo, who is on a roller skating date. So Remo fights the gang on roller skates. And that's what kills it. If he'd have done some more Sinanju type stuff,
yeah,
or fighting techniques or moves, I think it would have been better. But that roller skate fight sinks it.
Well, they try to in the opening credits. They try to tie it, well, link it to the movie where they have some scenes from the movie.
Yeah.
The long shots, you mm-hmm. know, where you can't tell who it is. And I think the song, isn't the theme song?
I think the theme song's the same.
Yeah.
And it's great because Roddy McDowall is like, you know, the show should be called Chun. And that's right out of the books. The characterization, and he's like, you know, that is Remo. He is a minor character. And they do. They tie it back to the movie. So it was kind of similar to how nowadays, you don't get a sequel, but like when the Ghostbusters game came out, Bill Murray said, this is the third Ghostbusters movie.
Oh, uh-huh. Yeah.
Or, you know, you won't get a movie, or like kind of the reverse situation, Firefly got canceled after one season, but then you got Serenity.
Yeah, yeah.
So
they tried to continue it and tie it together, yeah. But it just didn't work. It just was, it suffered from
TV production values.
TV-itis, yeah. Being, you know, written for TV by TV writers who mm-hmm. didn't understand the books or the character.
But I'll tell you this.
Yeah.
I had heard about it for years, and it actually came on Stars.
Oh, uh-huh.
And I DVR'd it.
Yeah.
And I kept that until the DVR went away, because I look at it as, personally, the same way I look at Colin Farrell's Bullseye and Daredevil.
Yeah.
It's god-awful, but it's what I had.
It's all we got.
It's all we got.
Yeah.
So I kept it. I watched that a bunch of times, too. I'm not going to lie to you. I watched it a bunch of times. But there's many, many nights, you know, if I'm bored and I'm looking for something fun to watch, background while you're doing laundry or whatever, you throw on Remo. It's perfect.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's a great, you know, mid-80s action movie that it's not heavy-handed. It doesn't have this intense emo drama.
Oh, no.
And
no.
And wondering who's doing what. Is there going to be a twist? What's the twist? No, it's a straight ahead. These are the bad guys. These are the good guys. Here's the action.
And it's fun.
And it is. It's a lot of fun. For all its faults, which, you know, like I said, I had to point out all the faults. It is a fun watch. I'll repeat myself over and over again because it's true. For Joel Grey, if nothing else, his performance just makes the movie. And Fred Ward. You know, and like I said, the other character actors that pop up that you've seen in so many other things, the familiar faces is kind of cool. The little thing, they tried to make a little thing going on between Major Fleming and Remo, and that just didn't, I wasn't buying any of that.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't much chemistry there, so that didn't really work. But it didn't bog the movie down. It didn't slow down at all. Because they were wise and they didn't play that up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just kind of in there. But like you say, it was a nice time capsule. Being with the Statue of Liberty being on the scaffolding at all. Is it dated? Not really. I mean, except for that is locking it in those couple of years.
Yeah.
But it's not like some movies where it's like, oh, God, this was shot in the 80s.
They don't beat you over the head with 80s-itis.
Yeah, when it was.
Yeah, there's no neon or big puffy hair or any of that stuff.
Yeah. So you can't, it's kind of in that, not so much a no time, but it's not anchored, you know, in when it was made.
Well, we also have to mention, I think, another thing that makes the movie so great is the music.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
How many times have you been practicing or working out and put that music on?
Yeah.
Tell me you haven't done it.
Tommy Shaw singing Remo's theme, What If?
Yeah. No, I was talking more about the instrumentals.
Oh.
Remo's theme and the fanfare.
The big orchestral pieces.
Yeah.
Or
also the, you know, the little flute parts. So great. So great.
It is good. It does have good music, which is, that was one of the saving graces of it. Because, hey, good action stars got to have good action music.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know? Every good hero should have
that's
some.
Right. I mean, watch Indiana Jones without the music. Still good, it's just like,
It's missing a piece.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Tommy Shaw, What If?
Oh, yeah.
And it's a very understated video.
Oh, the music video.
Music video. Have you ever seen it?
A long time ago, yeah.
Okay, well, he comes out and he's wearing a New York sergeant's jacket.
Uh-huh.
Police sergeant.
Oh.
Which, what Remo, he was a New York officer before he was shanghaied. And he's basically walking, looks down, sees a little tiny Statue of Liberty that he picks up, which kicks off the video.
Then
him and the band are performing on the Statue of Liberty.
Okay. I got to find this on YouTube then, see if I can...
I'll send it to you. It's very much worth a watch. and it's kind of how we came up with the idea for the podcast, because we were podcasting about, and I was driving home on vacation. I was just flipping through my music, and I'm like, it just smacked me in the face.
Why hadn't we talked about this before?
Because we drive like monkeys in heat.
We're two crumb feet.
The seasons move quicker than us.
Because this is one of those movies that's a favorite of both of ours separately, you know, over the years, before we ever met. And it's one of those that's like, oh, you like Remo too?
It was like the first day when I came out here, when I met you and Phyllis.
Yeah.
Was it? They said we had our little play date and off we went. And everything was like, oh, you like this, I like that too. You like this, and I like that.
I think it started with Jaws. They're going to need a bigger boat.
Mm-hmm.
That quote. And then it went from Jaws to Smokey and the Bandit to Remo.
To all the classics.
That's right.
Well, the classics, the people that listen to podcasts like this.
That's right.
You're not getting no Gone with the Wind or Citizen Kane here, fella.
No. That's for the normals.
When Orson Welles can dodge bullets, you come back to me.
That's right. When Tommy Shaw does a theme, Gone with the Wind, then we'll be talking.
I want Clark Gable hanging off the Statue of Liberty before you'll get any of that here. Thank you.
Oh, I'd pay money to see that.
But, I mean, the movie's 30-some years old, so I don't feel bad about spoilers. But if you haven't seen it, even with the rundown we've given, how it works, and just the performances are a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
And it's one of those and it'll become one of those movies that's just quotable to you.
Yeah, there's a lot of great lines in it. It's easy to get. I believe it's still available on Amazon on DVD for probably under $10. To be honest with you.
Oh yeah,
and it's had a lot of different. It's had a lot of different releases because there's a lot of different covers.
Mm-hmm.
VHS and DVD covers. The first release, of course, was the movie poster, and I think the latest release is just kind of Fred Ward standing there doing some kind of martial arts pose with the finger thing. Two fingers, yeah. So it's easy to find, and definitely, you know, urge you to check it out. If you like martial arts movies, if you like 80s action movies, definitely give it a watch. It's well worth it.
And a quick mention to our friends across the pond, if we have any listening. Over there, it was called Remo Unarmed and Dangerous.
Oh, okay.
So that's the same movie.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's the thing. That's another thing, too, that I think it kind of might have hurt it a little bit. They couldn't call it The Destroyer.
Mm-hmm.
Because Marvel Comics owned the rights to a character called the Mighty Destroyer. Mm-hmm. It's just too close just saying The Destroyer. I think that was why they didn't do it.
And then we also had the Lyle Alzado Jackhammer
that,
movie.
That was one theory why they didn't do it. Another theory is they wanted a name like James Bond.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they went with his name, Remo Williams. And it was called, I've seen it different titles on posters, on VHS tapes, on different things. I've seen it as Remo.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it as Remo Williams, The Adventure Begins. Yeah. I've seen it as Remo, The First Adventure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then you say Remo Williams, Armed and Dangerous. So it's what title was it? It wasn't consistent. So mm-hmm. That's another thing. That the marketing of it was bad. You know, it's like, because I don't remember it. I barely remember it coming out because I didn't see it until it was on cable. So I didn't see mm-hmm. it in the theater. So I barely remember it being in theaters.
The only thing, to tell you the truth, that I remember as a kid,
yeah,
before we got cable and I saw the movie,
uh-huh.
was one of the local TV channels, I want to say it was Channel 13, did one of the movie reviews of it on like the 11 o'clock news one night.
Oh, yeah.
That's the only thing I remember about the movie prior to
seeing
it on cable.
I bring up marketing because that's a big thing that can make or break a movie. And a recent example of that is John Carter. Okay. The books, John Carter, Warlord of Mars. Oh, well, that was the Marvel comic. The books were different things of Mars titles and all, but they marketed it. Well, the movie poster was crap for one thing. I think it just had a J and a C on it real big, looking like it was made in metal, and it was just, the movie was just called John Carter.
Mm-hmm.
Gave you no clue, unless you saw the trailer, that had anything to do with Mars. You didn't know what the hell the movie was about. The poster mm-hmm. didn't give you anything. The title didn't give you anything. And it came and it went. And we finally watched, Phyllis and I got it on DVD and watched it. It was like, it's not a bad movie. It's pretty good. A good little action space movie, you know, with a different kind of plot, because it's an old Edgar Rice Burroughs story. And it was enjoyable. It should have done better at the box office than it did. And I think the same with Remo is that it just, the people in charge of marketing and all just had no clue what they were working with.
Yeah, it's
to market
it too.
It's a
horse of a different color.
Yeah, because it couldn't be marketed as a martial arts movie to that crowd. Mm-hmm. It could be marketed as an action thriller, intrigue, you know, type thing, but it just didn't. They didn't know which way to go, and a combination of
and also you have to remember too, yeah. at the time, action heroes were Schwarzenegger, Stallone, and Chuck Norris, and Fred Ward, like you said, has that kind of everyman vibe that doesn't really lend itself to a big, you know, the next big action.
Yeah,
hero.
It wasn't until years later when Bruce Willis did Die Hard did you get that kind of action hero, mm-hmm. you know. And at this point in the mid-80s, that wasn't quite there yet.
But interestingly enough, to circle back around to Marvel,
yeah.
they ended up doing comic books.
They did.
They did
many
some
years
of the
later.
Magazine size, and they had miniseries and everything.
Many years later they did that. Which, and they were okay. I mean, they followed the books.
Those were fun. Yeah, those were straight out of the books.
Yeah.
They didn't really connect to the movies at all.
Yeah. That was like in the 90s, right?
I'd have to check the ones at home.
Yeah, something like that.
But again, it's what you had because it's all you had.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and those are really easy to find in comic shops and stuff. And I tell you, you could probably go in any used bookstore right now and find a couple of Destroyer novels. I know the one up the street from us has a handful of them.
Oh, yeah, and they're absolutely, they're great reads.
They're quick reads. They're well, like I said before, well-written and humorous. And the action is presented well in the books, and they're a lot of fun.
Now, I'm going to make this statement. I want to see what you think about it.
Okay, fire away.
They've been talking for years about doing a remake.
Yeah.
I don't want them to. I think they need to leave it alone.
Well,
because they're going to mess it up.
Well, I would like to see, maybe not, I'm not saying a remake, I'd say another movie. I'd like to see another Remo movie. And they would have to start again with the origin, just because that's what they have to do. But I would like to see another one. I would like to see it done right.
There's the problem.
Yeah. And it would have to be handled by people who know, who've read the books, who know the story, know the books, not just taking the screenplay and going with it. Because the big problem is most 99% of American directors out there today, or even European directors, don't know how to shoot a fight scene. Or any kind of action scene. They move, the trend that's been going along for too long is to take the camera and move it around real fast to basically hide the action or hide the actor's lack of skill in fighting, which is horrible, because you get some movies where the actor has studied fighting and the action scenes are well choreographed, but they move the camera around, you can't see them. Now, a lot of Asian directors will set the camera over here, let the action play out in front of you, and you can see all the action. And that's the way it should be done.
Here's what I'm afraid of.
Yeah.
If you read the books, see, and this is where you and I differ a little bit.
Yeah.
Some of the villains in the books, like, you know, Mr. Gordon's or Friend or whatever, they're big threats.
Yeah.
A lot of the books have, you know, single, you know, one type plot, like Grove or whatever. Uh-huh. And I remember there was a guy who was trying to scam electric cars or something like that. So the plot didn't really bother me. But what's going to happen is the first movie to the 80s crowd was perfect. But what they're going to do is what I call the diehard syndrome.
Uh-huh.
Remo was about one guy facing the odds with just his wit and his skill.
Yeah.
If they do another movie nowadays, it's going to have to be like that god-awful diehard movie where he's hanging on a jet and cars are flipping over. That's not what it's about.
Oh, yeah.
That's
yeah,
not
yeah,
the core
yeah,
of the movie.
Yeah.
And they're going to feel the need to put stuff like that in the movie to where it wouldn't matter if it was Remo or
yeah.
Matt well, see, Bourne or whatever his name is.
That's the thing. What I was saying is that it's have to be handled by somebody that knows the books, has read a lot of the books, knows the character, and is not just going to go with what's trendy and hip in action movies today and make it look like every other action movie. Yeah. That's the problem.
Until you get the producer that wants a giant spider in it.
Yeah.
That's the problem. Yeah. It's going to be the studios.
Yeah. So it needs to be kind of under the radar, you know, if it would ever get made. I don't think it's going to get made.
No, I don't think it will.
But then again, they brought the Gong Show back to TV.
We're not going to talk about that.
I mean, you know, they're rehashing everything that's old, not doing anything original.
But,
so it
but when
could
you
happen,
talk about, but when you talk about, you know, it would have to be small, kind of under the radar and everything.
Yeah.
That's exactly what the first one was.
Exactly. But it would have to be, it would need a bigger budget and people actually gave a shit about the material.
And that's why I don't think we're yeah. going to see it.
Now, this is not possible, but years ago, these two people unfortunately are not alive anymore. But I think the perfect casting, especially at the age they would both be right now, if they were still alive, for Remo and Chun, Brandon and Bruce Lee. Think about that. Think about how awesome that would be. Brandon had the look that's described in the books.
Mm-hmm.
The deep-set eyes, he was in shape, you know, good-looking mm-hmm. guy, average but good-looking guy. And Bruce could do anything physically you asked him to do. And he would be, what, in his 70s now, close to 80 by mm-hmm. this point? Add a little more old-age makeup. How awesome would that be? Damn shame.
I'd like to see that.
Damn
I'd
shame.
I'd like to see that.
But, hey, it you know, is what it is. But the movie that we've got, whatever it's called, Remo
That's
Williams,
right.
The Adventure Begins, under any title.
Chun, Master Assassin,
Assassin, yeah. It's still so much fun to watch. And, you know, I may even put it on tonight and watch it tonight because I hadn't seen it in a while.
Don't lie, we're both going to be watching it.
Yeah, we will,
tonight.
Yeah. It is a gas, and it's well worth, like I said, you can find it on Amazon, probably under $10, I'm mm-hmm. guessing. Do yourself a favor, give it a watch. If anything about the movie that you like, do yourself another favor and pick up one of the books. I would say any book below. I mean, they've done, what, well over 100 books by now. But I would pick something from the 60s, numbers in the 60s,
the 60s
lower.
To like the...
Lower, like
now,
the teens.
See, well, here's my thing. The ones in the 60s were kind of generic. When I started reading them, it was like in the 80s and 90s. And the books became thicker, but they became more detailed and they started putting in more like real world stuff, which I liked. It wasn't like generic bad guys. Like there was, a string, and they would have recurring characters.
Yeah.
Where Chun became very, very fond of a kind of large, overweight, balding conservative talk show host called Thrush Limburger. And they would change.
But no, see, they did that. And all the books did that. From the beginning, they did that.
Yeah, but they got it got more into it at the end.
Well, no, it
the
just
books
got more
thicker.
But it got more. It played to what was current at the time. The early books were like that. They I can't get any specifics to mind.
Plot-wise, it was.
Yeah, but that's what. No, they did characters like
oh,
that.
Oh God,
too.
Now we're arguing.
No, but I don't mean to argue, but that's what drew me to the books. I remember the early books.
This is all going to come out in post anyway.
Is the how it the social political commentary and the relating to real world characters, but of course they changed the name enough so they wouldn't get sued. You know? And that's what really made made me like them a lot, because I was like, oh, okay, I see what they're doing here. This is kind of cool, you know. But once it started to get especially into the numbers of the 70s and 80s, they didn't feel quite the same the way they were written. And after. I think it was after, I don't know what book it was, but when Chun actually said Remo is now a master of Sinanju, after that, the tone changed a little bit of the books. And of course, that's when they had the ghostwriter come in. Dick Sapir had long since passed away.
Mm-hmm.
Warren Murphy had, you know, a ghostwriter or two come in. And one of them was pretty good. But
yeah,
then there
was
another
one
for a few
books,
which the tone wasn't that good, changed. And then later on, it just got horrible. We're not even going to talk about that.
Well, the ones where it became horrible, I remember reading something somewhere from Warren Murphy. He said that, you know, these writers, he said this particular writer, and he didn't name the guy.
Yeah.
He said, but this particular writer is probably going to do what killer robots and mutants and a horde of gangsters never could, and that's kill the Destroyer.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the books kind of went away because there was something with the company, and then they came back, but they never really recovered, and then they just stopped coming out.
Yeah.
And then apparently there's a young adult series of Remo Williams books now, but that's...
Oh, good God, don't even. What was... do you remember the first book that you read, the first Remo book?
I want to say it was number 81, Cold Warrior.
Okay, I don't...
Like you said, it was... It was basically Walt Disney, but it wasn't Walt Disney, because his head was frozen, and they were at the amusement park, except all the rides were to kill him, and everything had the three black circles mascot over it and everything, so yeah.
I don't remember the number, but the title was Mugger Blood.
Oh, that's one of the early ones. That's
Like 16 or 18 or 26,
something super early.
But it was good, man. It was a quick read. It was gritty, fun. And I remember reading, you know, I was reading them in high school, you know, in between classes. Finished from the work, got 10 minutes, pulled that book out.
Oh,
you know,
read
as much as
I
could.
Hershey's Kisses. You finished one, you were ready for another one right away.
You know, they were just fantastic. I couldn't wait to read the next chapter, you know. And they always start off the same way.
His name was Remo, and,
and dot, dot, dot. Yeah, and
that's
it goes
right.
On.
That's right.
Oh, also, too, now, anybody that's that cares, in addition to the books and the movie, they also did some audiobooks, a series of audiobooks, and I don't know if they put them on DVD, but you can find them on cassette tape, probably used and stuff. I've got a handful of them. And they're good because there's somebody reading the book. And I forget what numbers they went, if they covered what years and all, but those are pretty cool if you like audiobooks.
I've never heard any of those.
I'll have to slide you a couple of them.
That'd
you have
be
a
cool.
cassette player in your car?
No.
What's a cassette player?
Yeah. I'm sorry, my car was made after 1980. I apologize.
You had to go buy a cassette player.
That's
just to hear
right.
These.
After one of these little hipster shops probably cost you $700.
Yeah.
But again, we digress.
We digress.
Well, we do that a lot around here.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. But Remo Williams, The Adventure Begins. Yeah. I mean, it's so much fun. And if you like, again, a action movie, especially from the 80s, anything to do with martial arts, it's fun. And
it's one of the rare action movies, you can watch it with the kids.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There's nothing overly graphic or cursing or anything.
No. There's action, there's not violence.
Mm-mm.
You know, it's not over the top. And there's no language in it, there's no you know, nudity in it, there's no graphic of anything. It's a good straight boom, 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 you know, ABC action picture.
Oh, yeah.
And highly recommended from both of us.
Oh, without question.
Right on. I think that's about it.
I think that's all we can say about it. Go watch it.
Yeah, go watch it right now. So until next time, thanks for listening. Good night, everybody.
Bye, kids.